Welcome back to the program. I'm Frank Ling from Tokyo, Japan.
And I guess that makes me Charles Lee from Baton Rouge.
I'm Angelica Ong coming to you from Taipei, Taiwan.
And I'm Iman coming to you from Chicago.
How's everybody doing today?
Feeling good. I'm really excited because yesterday was the first day of the nuclear summit in Brussels. And it's really great to see all those world leaders talking about atomic energy.
For a second, I thought you were going to say nuclear winter, and I was like, did I miss something?
I don't think it would be a great week then. You know?
No.
I mean, it depends on your perspective.
Which side you were on, you know? Well, maybe everybody loses, but...
Well, you're a cockroach, apparently. Actually, did you know that nuclear winter is a myth? That would be a really good subject to dig into on Grox in the future.
But the nuclear summit apparently is going well. Is it eventful? All kinds of people walking around?
Oh my goodness, it was inspirational, and it was a true summit. So you had a lot of world leaders, right? And they basically got up on stage and talked about the vision for the future. And it was basically like all the Europeans minus, I think, Spain, Germany, and Ireland.
And Austria.
Austria, obviously.
I mean, the ironic thing is the International Atomic Energy Agency is actually located in Vienna. And they were the ones that were hosting this conference.
They hosted a conference in Brussels, actually. But Ursula von der Leyen, who's German, she was there and she was talking about how important nuclear energy is for Europe. I think the trend is really, really turning in the direction of nuclear energy, at least in Europe. So it's tremendously exciting. And today I'll be hopefully transcribing and translating a lot of the text into Chinese for my advocacy work here.
Cool. So what do you think was the biggest announcement made at the summit?
I think just the fact that they all turned up and everybody was basically talking about how to do it. How do we build those reactors quickly enough? How, not if. So it seems like everybody getting on the right page. That's the biggest takeaway. And it seems like everything's flowing nicely downstream from COP28. So COP28 was when we got the huge pledge that all these countries signed on to triple nuclear energy. What they said, and very much downstream to that, and I think it's very much led by the French, because they already have all these nuclear power plants and they're looking to export more within the EU. Very European-centered, very French-led. Yeah, it's all about energy security. I think the Europeans really got it after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and you heard that reference over and over again, especially any country that's more on that side of Europe.
Were there any conversations that you are privy to about trying to get people on board with it, or is it just... we're just going to do it and people will have to deal with whatever misconceptions they have?
Well, I think just watching the live stream and hearing the interviews, it seems like people in Europe are also getting it. It's like this is not something that is top down only and driven by the leaders. This is like the people want nuclear. And you can see it very clearly with the host country, right, Belgium. You know, they were headed for a nuclear phase out. And now... you had both the prime minister and the energy minister, who's from the Green Party and used to be very anti-nuclear. They were talking to nuclear activists night before the summit about how to save nuclear power plants, how to build more nuclear power plants. So I would say the winds of change is definitely afoot. There's still so much work left because the supply chains are just not in a good place. But I think the momentum is there and we just have to keep it going.
So the mood then sounds like it's fairly optimistic?
Yeah, and what I really appreciated was, yes, it's something new. Yes, it's driven by the need for energy security. But the whole summit happened right next to a building called the Atomium, which is from the 1958 Belgian World Expo. And it was dedicated to nuclear energy. It's the subatomic structure. Big spheres that you can be inside of. And it's all about hearkening to an age where people were still excited about the possibility of nuclear energy to change our lives, to actually provide all this prosperity. And there wasn't all this crazy fear about nuclear energy. And it's like, wow, just to have these events either inside or next to the Atomium, and Alexander De Croo, the Prime Minister of Belgium, referred to it again and again. It also got me thinking, as a pro-nuclear activist, about the narrative that we're building. It shouldn't be one that's completely cold and icy and, you know, just like, well, this is a thing that makes sense. We should tap back into that age of excitement, that age of possibilities for the human race. Yes, we can use nuclear energy to help us decarbonize. Like President of France, Emmanuel Macron, said yesterday at the summit, isn't it stupid to be moving to EVs and be generating the electricity by fossil fuels? So, yeah, there's all these practical reasons to use nuclear, but also it's exciting. All this possibility of a quality of life increases for everybody on the planet that is not possible with anything else, because of the magnitude of the energy that's liberated from the atom in fission. I'm inspired, I'm happy, I'm so glad to have the chance to talk about this today.
Hopefully that all happens, and then Elon will have something useful to sell for his EVs, saying that he can charge them on nuclear. It's meant to be a segue, because I think you had a story about one of Elon's other companies.
Yeah. Has everybody seen the amazing stream from Neuralink?
They're doing all these tests, publicity is kind of stunts rather than...
You mean it's the one where they put a little wire probe into the brain and see if people's thoughts can manipulate something on the computer screen, right?
It's actually a chip they put in the brain and detects electrical impulses somehow. I think the most amazing part is the guy basically just thinks about moving the mouse and the mouse moves. It's not a one-to-one. They don't give very precise instructions. And actually, the Neuralink release is remarkably short on information, but it led me to do some digging. And actually, there's another company that has accomplished. From what I can see, it's the same sort of thing. And they're a startup out of Australia, and I think they're called Synchron. And they actually have a similar but different approach. They put a probe inside your jugular, and then they send it up your blood vessels and put it in your brain. But it's the same sort of thing. You just think. The person with the probe just thinks about it, and that triggers electrical impulses, and that moves the mouse, which boggles my mind.
But do they want to move the mouse, or is it just like any electrical impulse will move the mouse? Like, I'm just wondering, like, what
No. This is very intentional. So, okay, I'm going to actually read from, this is from Synchron, the competitor to Neuralink. Okay, so they said, our first patient, we didn't know what the signals would be like, so we got him to perform all these different tasks. Try to move your left hand, right hand, left leg, right leg. We tried to figure out which ones were the best for us to use. Over time, we realized it's generally better for us to put the implant in and say, here's the screen, try to make it click. Here's a little bar on the side that tells them how close they're to getting it. And they seem to work at it a lot quicker and better without us dictating exactly how they use it. And it's often very hard for them to tell us exactly what's working once it's working. So it seems like you just really, this sounds to me like you just, this is a Jedi mind trick or something. It's really amazing. But what it is it's electrical impulses that's picked up by, in the case of Synchron, 16 sensors, and that's connected to a implant under the skin elsewhere in the body. And that beams a Bluetooth signal to an app.
I have so many questions. I mean, I just don't even understand how, first of all, like where in the brain would you input the chip? I mean, presumably different parts of your brain control different things, but also like how is a thought translated through electrical impulses to a software? Like I'm so curious.
Yeah. Specific area of the brain, the electrical impulses could be picked up by the sensors. there's now two companies doing it. And according to Synchron, they've had many, many patients go through this procedure already, and they're able to do simple things like browse the web, internet shopping. And on the screen with Neuralink, we were able to see that guy who, 29-year-old Nolan Arbaugh, who's quadriplegic, and right there on the screen, you could see him playing a game of chess. So the pieces were moving around. It was all him. And he actually said that when he first got a meeting, the first thing he did was play Civilization 3 for 8 hours straight. Apparently, before he already had a mouse that he could move with his mouth, but Civ 3 is a very mouse-intensive game, so it was faster to do it with his mind. So he was playing Civ 3 for 8 hours straight. And I just thought that was hilarious. That it's very emblematic of today. It's like, we get the coolest technology. It's like, yes, let's play some video games.
Well, I'd be kind of scared to go shopping on the internet with that. I'm not sure what I'd end up buying inadvertently.
Well, you know, I think that's where everybody's mind is going, right? Because right now they're taking the use case that's where it's for sure the most bulletproof use case. How can you be against giving quadriplegic people the ability to use the internet, right? But I think we all know where this is going. You take the advances in these brain faces plus AI, you know, it's like the ultimate network humans. Like, you could almost see it happening. Yeah, it is kind of amazing how fast progress is happening these days.
How does the system differentiate between things you wanted to do and things you're just thinking? And I'm just wondering, like, how you bracket off your thoughts, right? Like, you might have an impulse in your head that says, click this thing or buy this thing, but you also have your, like, second order executive functioning thinking that's saying, no, don't buy that. And I'm wondering how that gets parsed up and how a system like this would distinguish between different kinds of thinking and how those get translated differently. Like, I think I have more questions than answers now.
Well, maybe this will help you a little bit. I don't know if it answers your questions, but this is Arba's description of how he interacts with this thing. So he initially tries to move his hands, even though he's lost the ability to use them. He's just pretending to move his hands. And then, this is his quote, from there, it becomes intuitive for me to imagine the cursor moving. Basically, it was like using the force on a cursor, and I could get it to move wherever I wanted. And seems like every day he's learning new stuff. So I think it is kind of like, it actually reminds me a little bit of when the LLM, the ChatGPT first came out. I'm just like, how the, you know, it's just like, it just happens. It's magic. It's really, really quite amazing.
Yeah, well, you know, they've been doing these types of experiments for quite some time on brain-computer interfaces, especially for neuroprostheses. You know, you can always read out a lot of different signals from the brain, but the trick was, how do you use those signals to do something useful, like control an arm or a prosthetic? And I think the advances come really in basically AI, which is able to take those signals and learn what correct signal is to do a particular action. So in some ways, as long as the signal's correlated with what you want it to do, then you have this interpreter that you've tacked onto it, which now is able to do all kinds of things. Everybody's brain is a little bit different. Everybody's signals are a little bit different, but yet on the little AI in between, and it's able to use an interpreter between what that individual person wants to do and what it winds up doing with control device on the output end. On the input end, it's a little more tricky as well.
Well, that's interesting, Charles. Where did this stuff first get started, brain-computer interfaces? So what's the history, and what was, you know, before, like, say, this crop of companies like Synchron and Neuralink, what were they able to accomplish with it?
Well, you know, people have even been able to use signals as courses, the EEG signal. These are just scalp electrodes, which you put on the head to train some computer then to recognize those signals. And it's been used to people playing Pong or moving a robot arm up and down, this kind of stuff. So that's been for a while, right? And so now the advances have had to come in terms of the interface itself, making it biocompatible, right? You want something that sits there in the brain if you're going to have these really thin microelectrodes for a long period of time. You have to have things that are going to sit there for a while, dense enough, and that won't move around a lot, and are kind of stable, and tethering out the line, signal, all these kinds of things that are largely technical in nature. But the whole idea is you're reading electrical activity from neurons firing, and then you want to know Can I use those signals in any meaningful way? Control some motor output, right?
So it's kind of a reminder that a lot of those big breakthroughs that we see, and that's really taking the world by storm, often don't come from an entirely new concept. It's just that we're able to refine it to a level where it's actually useful now. It's no longer just a toy.
The more interesting philosophical question to me is that there have been a lot of experiments which have shown that the decision to move, say, your arm, or actually precedes your awareness of having moved, right? So this idea that you want to move your arm as being volitional, decided before you actually become aware of it, and you yourself are conscious, whatever this is, host interprets that as you having actually decided to move your arm when it was just going to happen whether you, quote, wanted it to or not.
One of the arguments in terms of saying there's some sort of quantum entanglement in a biological process?
I think it's more just a deterministic process, right? Things are just, so it's an argument against free will, right? Mm-hmm. Is that everything's mechanically determined by processes that are going on in the brain, and that your conscious perception or awareness or all of this is also just a purely deterministic function. And you thinking that you're actually having some will to do this or not is a
illusion.
Illusion, right?
There was an interesting study kind of along those lines that was quite old, I think, but they would stimulate certain parts of the brain to make people laugh, and they would ask people why they were laughing, and they would invariably come up with an explanation. And so they sort of did this study about how, like, the human mind will always confabulate a cause for why it's doing something, even if we know the cause is just someone stimulating a certain part of your brain. And so they'd be like, oh, I remembered a joke from yesterday. And it without fail, people did that, even at times when they were aware of what was happening, that it was just very uncomfortable to not know what's determining your behavior. And similar with other things where they'll ask people, like, why did you buy this pasta sauce? And people will be like, well, the ingredients are good. But, like, overall, it was because of its placement on a shelf or something that you weren't aware of. So there's a lot of that erodes our sense that we know why we're doing anything that we're doing.
Exactly. Yeah, now the same case with all these studies with split brain patients as well, right? Mm-hmm. Where the individual has a cut through the middle of a brain connecting the two hemispheres, corpus callosum. And so information that's coming from the opposite side of their body is only being interpreted by one side of the brain, right? So each side of the brain is kind of acting independently. But this is the idea that there's lateralization of function in the brain, that the left side of the brain is the speaking, logical part of the brain, whereas the right side is more this emotional, non-speaking, holistic part of the brain. And if you present something, some information to the so-called right side of the brain, which is non-speaking, and you get it to do something like a motor action on the left side, moves the left arm, but the left side of the brain can see that because of the thing in its visual field. And you ask them why they did that, and they'll come up with some weird reason, right? Just to explain this movement of their arm, which they themselves were not, the left side of the brain was not thinking that they were controlling, but they will say, oh, I moved that because I wanted to move the spoon to get the sugar, when it was really some other weird thing that was prompted to the right side of it. So again, essentially said that there's this left side of the brain, which is the interpreter, which is always looking at all the things that we're doing and coming up with a story for why we did it and assigning some sort of motivation to all these kinds of things that we do beyond our ability to control one way or the other.
So it seems there's some, like, psychologists and motivational coaches who've been taking some of these ideas to help people become more, you know, effective at their work or personal life. And yeah, I'm not sure if you've read this book, The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, that came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, it seems to overlap with some of his ideas about how to, in this case, how to understand habits and to establish in ways that make you feel like you can do work without feeling like you're doing work, because it's all automated somehow.
In some ways, we're all sort of creatures of our environment and trained to do the things that you do based on everything that's been fed into you. If you think of yourself as just sort of a machine system, basically everything that's gone into you has determined what your output is at time T. So.
I'm not really good at programming myself quite that well. I wish it was that easy.
I don't know. So I'm not sure if I'll be first in line if Elon launches his hardware upgrades through Neuralink. But
well, we'll see. I mean, the Teslas did come a long way in a short amount of time. And while I'm not first in line, I definitely think this is one to keep an eye on. It's like, wow. Really, there was a question on Twitter the other day. It's like, what would you prefer, to go 50 years into the future, into the past, or get $12 million or something like that? like that and stay in the present. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not sure I even want to go 50 years into the future, because I feel like we're kind of sitting in a really interesting time in history. I want to see what happens.
Well, isn't that the ancient curse? I hope you live in interesting times.
I've never been able to find the actual Chinese.
I know. I think it's an apocryphal thing.
Like a Confucius say.
Yeah, one of those things.
And I feel like we always, even if it's only the illusion of control, I do think that it is people who decide what happens next. So definitely have some possible scary outcomes. But I also think we have a lot of good pathways too. So we'll see what happens.
Here we are playing Prometheus, and we'll see if we destroy ourselves or make ourselves better. Who knows? All right. Well, very cool. So this is all on the Neuralink website, their video and their announcement. And I guess people who haven't seen it can probably check out.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Angelica.
Not a problem. It's such a pleasure to be able to talk about all this development with you guys.
All right. Well, so until next time when we come back with our brain interfaces, I've been Charles Lee.
I'm Angelica from Taipei.
I'm Anne from Chicago.
And I'm Frank from Tokyo.
Have a great afternoon and keep on rocking. Thank you.
Thank you.